In today's episode, we unpack 7 church newsletter mistakes that many churches make and what you need to do to fix it. We hope this conversation helps your church reach more people and grow. This is the Reach Right Podcast. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Well, hey guys, welcome to the Reach Right Podcast, episode number 44. I am your host, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host,
Ian Hyatt. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Ian. Good to talk with you today. Excited for our conversation. We're going to be talking about 7 church newsletter mistakes that churches make and how you can fix them. I think it's going to be a good conversation for us to have because it seems like most churches in 2021 and even before, they do newsletters. You guys do a newsletter, right, at your church?
Yeah. Dude, we've done it for a long time now. And a lot of churches have been doing them for a very long time now.
Yeah,
they have not died.
They have not died it's surprising, I would say, because there's been much made of the rise of social media and text messaging. Right. And people will say that emailing is dead or email advertising is what newsletters are. They'll say that that's dead. I don't find that to be the case. I find that email still is. I don't know if I could say that's as valuable as it's ever been. And there's certainly some changes that make it harder in this climate. But I think that, I don't know about you, but I open emails. I read emails. Yeah. I look at my email every single day. Maybe that's a product of being a Gen Xer. I don't know. Or like a borderline millennial where I am. I do think that most people still look at their, and the evidence seems to show, most people look at their email daily. So I think every church should be doing some kind of email marketing newsletter type thing. It just makes sense in this day and age. So I know our church does. And now, is it useful for everybody? I've seen a lot of bad newsletters. Let me do this kind of, we didn't plan this ahead of time, Ian. Do you read your church's newsletter every week?
No,
me neither. If I'm being totally honest, I think that's the thing, is that that's not necessarily the point of what a newsletter is about, is to get someone to read it and pore over every bit of content. But I think what it is there to do, and we'll talk about this a little bit in the process, is to get someone to take a step, to draw them deeper into that relationship with Jesus, into discipleship. Yeah. And so, I think this is, sometimes we can reduce email and kind of minimize it and make it something that's just kind of an administrative task of something we have to do. But really, we see this as a discipleship opportunity for churches. This is something that if you do this right, it'll help people grow in their faith and grow closer to Jesus. And I believe more people will be added to the number who are being saved if we do email right. So maybe that's just me being super spiritual, but I think it's something good. So anything to add to that?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think we are in the age of where someone has their junk email that they give out to, like, you know, if someone asks for it at a shop or something like that, or this is the one I don't want to read. So if the church newsletter could end up in your good email address, then that's a win too. So,
Absolutely. So we're here today to help you to get your email newsletter for your church, get it opened by more people, get it read by more people, and get more people to make decisions to be closer to Jesus because of it. And we see a lot of bad church newsletters out there, and we want to help fix some of those problems here. So that's the point of the conversation here today, is to try and help you fix some of those kinds of issues. So I'll go ahead and kick us off with church newsletter mistake number one, and that is not using an email service. For a lot of people, this is such a no-brainer, but I would bet that there's people in our audience that this seems like this is something that might be new to them, because I've been part of churches that were medium sized at times, you know, maybe 400 or 500 people that were going to them. And our email strategy was that we would take this giant BCC or blind carbon copy list, put it into Outlook so that nobody could at least see other people's email addresses and send it out.
Yeah.
And there are so many reasons why this is a bad idea in 2021. There is no reason on earth that you shouldn't be using an email service, some kind of an email service provider. Here at Reachrite, we use one called Zoho Campaigns. We're in kind of the Zoho platform of all their services. So Zoho Campaigns make sense for us. Maybe your church management software offers some kind of a mass email service. Far and away, the most popular one is one called MailChimp. So that's one that I have a lot of experience with as well.
I've used it.
MailChimp is 100% free if you have less than 2,000 contacts on your list. So if you have less than that, which I think the vast majority of churches and our audience will have less than 2,000 contacts on their mailing list, that is a great service to use. And maybe you could share a few reasons why it's important, Ian, to use an email service. You can kind of give us some insight on that.
Well, they have a lot more options than just your standard email. You know, you can upload images into them. You can add links a lot easier. The list goes on and on, but I think these are designed to actually be a newsletter system rather than, like you said, just here's the subject line and let me put a bunch of people on here. That reminded me of, that's like a bad like group text, right? If someone puts you on a group text and now you're getting messages you weren't necessarily interested in. So it made me think of that's kind of the equivalent when it comes to that. But yeah, I think things like MailChimp, I've used it. As you know, I had a brief stint in real estate and I created a newsletter and tried to think of everyone I can put on there to get that on out there. But what I learned was through using MailChimp, I did have a lot of options and things that I can play with and things that email wouldn't allow you to do alone.
Yeah. You know me, I'm a numbers guy. So the great thing about an email service is you can measure everything. We'll talk more about that in this conversation here today. So that's huge. They look prettier. I think that they have tools and basically things that you never see as the sender that help it get into more inboxes. Listen, it's like the filters that filter out spam messages, they are very robust nowadays. And if you are just sending a blind carbon copy email through your Outlook or your Gmail account or something like that, it will wind up in spam very often and never be seen by your user. So this email services, they really help you get over that. They don't guarantee you getting out of spam folders, obviously, but they will help you do better for people that are actually interested in that content there. So I think that's an easy one that you should correct. Go sign up today for MailChimp. Another one is Constant Contact. That's one of the really famous ones. I will say that usually if you use some kind of a church management software, they usually have some email marketing tools. Now, in my experience, they can't really compete with a MailChimp or something like that because they just don't have the budgets that, even our biggest church management software companies like Church Community Builder, Fellowship One, Planning Center, those places, all great services, but they don't have anywhere near the budget of a MailChimp or a Constant Contact and what they can do there. So I would probably look at some of those email specific providers and look at that route first.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I'll tackle the next one, which this is a very important one that maybe people would miss because I think everyone's goal is to, you know, have as many email addresses on your list as possible. Right. But this is the mistake is to not clean out your email list. So, whether or not it's a church, it's a business. Like I said, whenever I did real estate, I was surprised. I probably had like 500 people I can put on there. I was like, wow, that's great. That's 500 people that are going to get my email. But did it do me any good if, you know, 300 of them never even opened up one of my emails? And again, like you said, a lot of these systems will allow you to measure and see who's opening your emails, who's not. And, you know, if someone unsubscribes, that's actually better than someone that actually just sits on your email list but never opens it. So your delivery rate, as far as, you know, people, you know, opening it and doing something with it, you know, you want to clean out these. Like if someone's after what, I don't know what time frame we put on it, but let's just say someone doesn't after 6 months or X amount of newsletters ever opens it. Well, you know, it's time to probably just remove them, even if they don't hit unsubscribe.
Man, I've been on the receiving end of those unsubscribes, and I hate it. Like, so as a pastor, I remember when I didn't really see these personally, but I know my admin would let me know that, oh, so-and-so unsubscribed. And it's usually someone that, you know, we cared about and we were hoping they were getting connected more to the church, and then they go ahead and they unsubscribe. It's almost like you have to get past that idea. Like, don't mistake a email list as like someone's salvation, right? Like, just because they're unsubscribing from your email list doesn't necessarily mean they won't be with us in heaven anymore. God's not done with them yet, and God doesn't require them to be on our email list. But
and they may be following you another way on social media or something else.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think that that's the case. But I will acknowledge to our audience, at least, I know it hurts when you get that unsubscribe, but you said it exactly right, Ian. And unsubscribe is a good thing because it weeds out your list. And the way that these algorithms for emails now work is that if you're sending out thousands and thousands of emails and only seven people open your emails, the algorithms say, hey, whenever emails come from this address, let's keep a careful eye on it because they feel kind of spammy to me. Nobody ever opens this stuff up. So let's make sure we limit it. This is probably going to have to go in the junk mail folder next time because this person's never opened it. So, and unsubscribe is great. And then also you do need to, I think you said the right number. I would say at a minimum of every 6 months, if someone hasn't opened up one of your emails, then it's probably time to remove them from your list because the odds are if you're emailing them weekly, so they've had, 26 chances to open an email and they went 0 for 26. Well, it's probably a good indicator that they're not really interested at this point, at least, or maybe in most cases they change their email address or they just don't open that account anymore or something like that. But I think that in those cases, it really only helps you to weed down your list. And I know it's painful. We have a list of 7,000 or 8,000 people that we email here at ReachRight. And every 6 months I go in and we probably take 1,000 or so people off of there. And I don't, you know, you can take it personally and say, I guess our content's really been crummy lately and that kind of stuff. But you know what? Like, it's just, it's not the right timing. It's not the right message. And that's okay. It's just the way that it is there.
And we got to remember that people are being hit with so much stuff on a daily basis, not just emails, but, you know, online ads that pop up, you know, on Facebook or wherever, you know, we're being hit and bombarded by. So they just might just not want to have one extra thing. And like we talked about is, you know, they may be interested in following your church another way. You know, maybe they follow your blog, you know, maybe again, they follow you on social media. And honestly, it's one of those things where I'm careful about it. Like for my good email addresses, like we were talking about, ones that I actually check daily,
right?
Less is better for me. And that might be just the way that they're viewing it. They still may love your church, but they're just trying to keep things minimalistic. So,
yeah, that's exactly right. So let me get number three. Church newsletter mistake number three is sending emails at the wrong times. Sending emails at the wrong time. So in my experience, having been on several church staffs, the time that churches usually send their church emails or their newsletter is when the administrator's done with the church newsletter. That's when it gets sent. So sometimes that'll be on
send.
That's it. It said, you proofread it and do all that kind of stuff. And then you hit send. And so sometimes it'll be on Wednesday and sometimes it'll be on Fridays. And if it's been a busy week, maybe it won't get out till Friday night or something like that. But whenever it's done, that's the time to send it. So that is not a good practice. You should probably be consistent with when you send out those emails. It's going to be different from church to church. So if you are in a white collar kind of a community, most of the people in your church they have 9-to-5 jobs in offices, then, you know, usually something around mid morning is a great time to send it. If you're in a blue collar community where nobody's on their phones all day and then they pull them out after work, maybe you should do it early in the evening. There's lots of strategies on that. So it's going to be different different from place to place.
Yeah.
As a general rule, so this is just like if you just took the all of the United States population, the best times to send emails are the first half of the week, Monday, Tuesday, yeah. Wednesday, in the late mornings. That's usually the yeah. best time to send emails.
Not a Friday night.
Not a Friday night, generally speaking. That's not a good time when people are settling into their Netflix show yeah. or whatever that would right. be. They probably won't dig into your email. So I think that's big. I'll mention this too, is one of the great things about email service providers is most of them, they offer an optimal open time sending plan. So the way it works for ReachRight is I say, hey, start sending out our newsletter or our weekly email update. Start sending it out at 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning. That's when we do it. But it also has an optimal open time. So it basically takes our entire list of several thousand people and it sends it. It knows when they've opened emails in the past and when yeah. they're most likely to be looking at their phones or their computers. And it sends it at that time over the next 24 hours. So our yeah. big email campaign, it goes out anywhere between Wednesday morning and Thursday morning. And it basically it's smart enough to figure out when people are most likely to open it. And this is so interesting, because I don't even know when I'm most likely to open email, but the yeah. system seems to know this stuff about me. So what do you have to add to that, yeah. Ian?
What I have to add, is what I see most, and this is not just for churches, but what I see most companies or, who I think of is actually Tom Rainer and Kerry Newhoff, both yeah. very knowledgeable people as far as church leadership, church marketing, tech, the list goes on and on. Their target is either pastors, ministry leaders, or people who kind of work in the church industry we do. And one of the things that I think they're very good at is the timing of when these emails come. They usually come around like 7, sometimes maybe around 7:30 a.m. I think that they get pastors and people like us before they start their work day, if you will, and all of that. And I'm actually more likely personally to open those before I begin my work day. And it gives me some good knowledge base, something applicable to yeah. what I do in helping churches. So I think you just got to think through your people, right? Yeah. And a lot of pastors, and they know their people, they know their church service times and which people go to. And so you got to think through it a little bit, and it's good to have that strategy.
Yeah. See, I'm in Hawaii, so I get all their emails at like 3:30 in the morning is when they come to me. So,
yeah. Well, that's just, I don't feel sorry for you.
No, it's okay. I don't have my phone in there with me. It doesn't wake me up. It's okay.
There you go. Well, let me tackle the next one. And this one I like, and I chuckle, I've chuckled inside and outside with this, but that's another mistake is sending ugly emails.
Yeah.
Sometimes people forget that, even though the majority of content in an email is going to be written text, there's, still, when people see these things, they got to be engaging. There's got to be yep. something that stands out. We've talked about it. And here's another reason why you don't want to just use regular email, but you want to use something like MailChimp or Constant Contact. All these systems allow you to upload attractive imagery, subject matter imagery, whatever the email's about, kind of yep. just like your sermon series. Like as a pastor, you want to find an image or something that it ties to that series. Same thing you should be doing with your emails. Cause I mean, that not judging a book by its cover, that's out these days. People mm-hmm. do judge as much as you, it's wrong. Maybe they do. People just like the rule with your website, you got only a few seconds to get someone engaged on the homepage there. Right. Same thing with a newsletter. And I've heard from so many pastors and ministry leaders over the years that some of their newsletter systems are done by the church secretary using this old branding and clip art mm-hmm. from the church bulletin. They basically take the church bulletin and they yeah. pop that in their newsletter and just upload that, and they call it a day, and they're like, wait, great, two birds with one stone, but you're sending something out that's just, it's not supposed to be a church bulletin and it needs to look better. So.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Ian. I think that we miss the fact that this is probably reaching just as many people as how many people show up on Sunday mornings for a lot of churches. It's a huge communication opportunity.
Maybe more.
Probably. And I mean, it's probably going out to more people most churches than actually the number of people that show up on Sundays, because you have people that are out of town or people that signed up and haven't been back in a while. I don't know how many are opening it for your particular church, but I know this is one of the biggest things for us, for instance, at Reach Right. I mean, this is a way that we see... We send out our email to thousands. We have usually about 2,000 people open it. And of those, several hundred will click on it and go in and get deeper into the content that we put out there. So when it comes to ugly emails, I do want to say one thing. I think that there is a case to be made. In addition to not sending ugly emails, I think sometimes it's okay to have text-only emails, though. And let me take a second I've tested a lot of this for us, and I've seen churches that have tested this. And I know for specific kinds of emails, it makes sense to do text-only. So a lot of our emails, if you're on our email list, if you're not, please get on it. We'd love to send you messages and update you when we have new content. But our primary goal is to introduce new pieces of content to people, tell them about what we're thinking about here, and get them to click deeper on it and get onto our website and engage with us and just continue to help pastors that way. And so we have found that I can do nice, our design team can do really nice designed emails with all kinds of graphics, but then we can also write 4-sentence emails that say, hey, if you want to know more about this, here's the link. God bless you. Have a great week. Those kinds of things in there. And we'll see more people click on to our emails that are plain text than we will ones that are like fully designed and those things in some cases. Now, for church newsletters, I don't think that that's always the way that it should be, because I think a church newsletter, you're probably trying to hit a variety of topics covering what this week's sermon is about, invite people to come out, get people to sign up for baptisms,
upcoming events,
all that kind of stuff there. So you probably need some more design in that. But if you're sending out individual emails to get one specific call to action. So let's say it's a reminder about Easter that's coming up and you want to remind people to invite someone for Easter. I think a message from the pastor that's like 5 sentences long with a clear button to click and call people to action, that might be the best case. So don't mistake no ugly emails. I'm full agreement with you. No ugly emails. That's a bad idea. But it's okay sometimes to just use text emails, because that's the way most of our emails come across. When you and I email each other, we don't put all kinds of graphics and those kinds of things in there. And, you know, we send our normal emails. It can be more likely read if it's just text in some cases.
That's good. Good stuff. Cool. Nothing to add there.
Let me get number 5 then. Using uninspired subject lines. Using uninspired subject lines. So let me give you a couple of examples of bad subject lines. So, church newsletter week of May 5th. That's a bad subject line that would make
boring.
Nobody ever open it. Or weekly update. That's another bad subject line that you shouldn't have as your church email newsletter. It is really important, I think, for churches, and this is probably, if you get nothing out of this conversation, this is the key takeaway. You need to use a unique, really interesting subject line that you would click on every single church email that you ever send out there. Because the fact is, if someone does not click on the email, then they'll never read the content that's in there. And the only tool you have to get someone to click on an email is the subject line and what it says there. So you want to use something that will almost it will just really compel someone to get in deeper and click into this. And so this is just really important to get this right here. I would spend probably when we do our subject lines for our emails here and our team, we kind of brainstorm those. I probably spend 10 minutes or so kind of bouncing off ideas and making sure you get the words exactly right. That's probably the 5 to 10 most important words that I write every week is whatever that subject line is going to be that I do week in and week out. So really getting this right is super important.
Yeah, that's good. And you know, it's funny, you reminded me of when I started after college and started my first real job, and it was a sales job. And at that time, it was acceptable to just put like your company's name in the subject line.
Oh gosh.
And people would still, you know, still open it. Now, I mean, we should have still been a little more creative than that, but a lot of us would do that and the emails would still get open.
Sure.
Well, now again, people are being bombarded. They have, you know, filtering in their email to take certain stuff up. Again, they're seeing more emails. So you need something that's going to stand out, and it's just, it no longer can just be, you know, my church, for a good example, does a really good job of this. I'm on the men's, like anything men's related, I'm on a newsletter for. Mm-hmm. And instead of it just being like morning prayer, like, because there's a men's prayer gathering on Friday morning. So if they just sent out something that just said prayer or something like that, it's kind of like, okay, well, yeah, we know about prayer. That's it. But instead, something like, men, time to step up and pray for your family, or, you know, respond to the call, like, you know, time to man up. You know, those types of things get my attention a lot more. And I'll click on something like that. Oh, you're challenging me as a man? What's coming from my church here? So, you know, it's good to think through some of those things.
Yeah, let me add one more thing that I've been seeing, and it's in this idea of subject lines. And this is not my nature. I'm not a guy that does this, but emojis work. So as much as I don't, if you know me, you know I don't use a lot of emojis in my personal conversations and texts. And my kids will send me emojis, and I'm a dad, so I'll try to respond back the way I'm supposed to. Yeah. But it's just maybe I missed that boat as an elder millennial / Gen Xer, I guess. But emojis give you a higher open rate. You better believe I use emojis all the time in my subject lines whenever we do our newsletters or anything like that here, our weekly emails. So emojis are good. For what it's worth, don't be afraid to dabble in the emoji land.
Good. That's good. Yeah. I'll tackle the next one. And we kind of covered it a little bit already, but we can go a little deeper. It's forgetting to have a call to action on your newsletter. So, again, we've had so many podcasts already just talking about the importance of calls to action. You and I were joking before starting the podcast today. I was like, you know, really, there should be a call to action in everything you do in life, right? So, when your mother comes and visits from out of town and she shows up at the door and you hadn't seen her in a while, you don't say, "Hey, mom, just good to see you." You give her a hug. You know, there's an action. And we've talked about this before, just every good sermon, every good message out there, you should invite someone to respond, you know, to take that next step in their faith and so on and so forth. So, we've seen this on websites. We've talked about it. We've said, hey, you know, churches have been notorious often for just having an about page with their vision, mission, beliefs, and they just say, there you go, bye-bye. No, you want to ask someone to take that next step. And if your newsletter's like event-based, when let's just say, you know, with the summer's coming up, let's just say you have a kids camp or a youth retreat or something like that. Call to action, and that should be for a parent to sign their kiddo up, you know, maybe something like that. You got to think of course, what your newsletter is, but what do you want someone to do? Right. Now, sometimes newsletters are just informative, but there's still going to be something that someone can do with that information, right?
Yeah. I would argue that if you really think about it and you can't think of what a call to action would be for this, I would consider that maybe it doesn't belong in your church newsletter, that content. If there's nothing that someone does as a result of doing it, even if it's like, I just want to give someone a theological or like an encouragement for the week, that's your primary goal. Even in that case, I think you would probably in the newsletter tease it and then have them link off and go to your website and they can dig in more for those kinds of things. So I would never put, like, if I have a letter from our pastor and it's an encouragement about something coming up or some way they want us to pray. I would never put a 500 word letter into the body of a newsletter. I would have it on our website. You have more control over things that way, and you can engage with people better that way and give them other opportunities to respond that way. So, but I really stand by that. I think that if you can't think of what I want someone to do, then it probably doesn't belong in your newsletter. And we say that same thing about websites. If you have a section on your website and you don't have anything you want someone to do with it, then it probably doesn't belong on your website. So everything needs to call people to take another step, to have an application, to do something as a result of getting it.
Yeah. And one last thing I'll add to that too, is think about it. If let's say you sent out a newsletter to only 500 people, let's just say 20 people filled out a form.
Right.
Well, that's a huge win totally. For those 20 people. Those 20 people are also going to remember that this newsletter, it allowed me to take the next step that saved me time or allowed me to get signed up for something or sign my kiddo up for something. So I think too, when someone takes that extra step to fill out a form or whatever, they're going to be stickier. And we've seen that too, just on church websites where someone fills out like a plan your visit form. You saw this at your last church that you pastored that those were not everyone filled those out, those plan your visit forms, but the people that did, you said they were the stickiest return visitors. So I think
absolutely.
That again, it's a huge win when someone takes that extra step.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I think you got that right. Yeah. So let me hit the last one. Number seven is not measuring results. Perfect for me. I'm a numbers guy and I measure lots of stuff. That's just kind of the way that I'm wired. Yeah. That just works for me. But, you have these tools, you're using a service, you're calling people to action, you're doing all this other stuff. It is so valuable to take a look at what's working and what isn't, and then make course corrections as you go. Every time we do anything, and this goes for all of, from our podcast to our blog posts, to our email newsletters, to everything we do, you can measure just about everything nowadays. And if you're not learning from what you're doing there, you're missing a huge opportunity. So some things that you should be measuring, all of these systems are going to measure your delivery rate. So how many of your emails get delivered? They're going to measure your open rate, how many of the delivered emails get opened, and then they're going to measure your click-through rate. How many of the opened emails do people click on and go to your site or take that next call to action? And there are really three distinct things. The delivery rate, you should take a look at that and keep an eye on that, and you fix that by cleaning up your email list, getting people off of there that aren't opening it anyway, those that are bouncing, you get rid of all those bad emails, it ups your delivery rate. That actually, in turn, it helps your open rate. Your open rate, the only thing you can do about that is write better subject lines. And if you have 20, once you've done 20 email newsletters with 20 of your best cracks at a good subject line, you'll be able to get in there and you'll say, well, let's see, this one that we wrote here, only 9% of people open that. But this one over here, 25% of people open that. So whatever we did
because
on this
one, it had
one,
an emoji.
It had an emoji. That's right. So, so whatever we're doing on that one that worked, let's try to do more of that. And whatever we did on the one that only got 9%, let's try to do less of that. I don't know if I mentioned this before too, just as an encouragement to you guys, most people won't open your emails. Like, so more than half, and I mean, if for some reason you're getting more than half of your emails get opened, you're killing it. You're doing something really good. The industry average across not just churches, but all industries and email marketing, 20% or so is a good open rate. Okay. So the only way you fix that is writing good subject lines. So you got to measure that and see what's working. Lastly, the click-through rate, the calls to action. This is something that's really important to measure. You're doing very well if you have a 3% click-through rate. So if 3% of those get clicked through and they go onto your site and take a step or do the call to action, that's a win. But this is changed by what are you writing in the copy? Are you using, are you sending ugly emails? Do you have a clear call to action with a clear button to take a next step? All those kinds of things are going to affect that. So you need to look at those numbers, measure them, and make course corrections based on what you see. Look at what's working, look at what isn't, and try to do more of what's working. What do you have to add?
Yeah, not much. That was very thorough and that's good stuff. And I think though that, you know, if someone's already taking this step, you know, to invest time and effort and, you know, you find a system out there, a newsletter system, then why wouldn't you want to know the results? You know, it's kind of just like pastors, you know, tracking how many salvations they have and baptisms. I mean, if you're getting a lot of new visitors in a given year and none of them are taking that next step in your faith, well, what do we need to do different during our church service or during my sermon? So it's the same thing. But it, I think that's what I would say. If you're going to take the time to do this,
measure
you definitely want to see, you want to measure it so that it's going to become more effective.
Yeah. I think one of the struggles we have in ministry is that people will, we get a lot of anecdotal evidence. So people will tell us things, but there's a lot of stuff in spirituality and in faith and in the church that's hard to measure. Right. And so, and to be very frank, people will tell you things that are not true very often.
Right.
They'll tell you things like, oh, pastor, that was a great message. Oh, I really loved that small group material that you did. It's so important and engaging for us. And people will just tell you that because they can't come to you and say, pastor, that was a really bad message. And I'd give that one a D plus, or like out of a scale of 100.
Some people do that, but not
some
many.
People. I know I have those people too. You have few of those. But you're not able to get real numerical evidence of how you're performing on a week-to-week basis in lots of areas of ministry. You don't want to give your whole church a little sermon rater where they give you a percentage grade on your sermon every week and take that feedback, right? That'd be terrible. But when it comes to email, this is one of those areas, and web development and all these things, this is why I love these areas, is that we can actually get real, honest feedback. And it's not offensive or anything. It's just what's working and what isn't. And you can see the kinds of things that people are opening. And when I talk this way, when I write this way, I have people are much more engaged with it and much more likely to take a next step. And you can kind of count these things. So this is one of those great areas when we get so little honest feedback, it gives us real input onto how we can make improvements in this. So I don't know, maybe I'm wired differently and I enjoy that kind of stuff. But I think if you dive in, a lot of people really enjoy that.
Well, you know, and I'll just say this, you are wired that way and I'm less wired that way. However, whenever for stuff like that, I have to kind of go the extra step and extra mile to dig in and analyze things. But every time I do, I actually come away with learning something and it makes me better. So even for those of us that struggle to want to measure and dig in too deep and get analytical, I don't know, every time I do it to at least a good extent, I'm made better for it. So I would encourage it to even the pastor out there that is not inclined to do that.
Non-analytical among us will try to encourage them to do it too. So well, good man. Well, that's it for this week, guys. We hope this has been helpful to you. Email marketing is a huge opportunity. Email newsletters for your church. I encourage every church to do it. I hope this has been helpful on some mistakes that we see most often out there. We hope it's been helpful to you and helps you make some changes in how you're doing it. If it has been helpful, it means a lot to us if you would rate, review, subscribe, comment, and just give us some feedback on what you think of this podcast. We want to thank you guys so much for being part of the Reach Right family, and we will catch you next week.
See you.
Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.